Okay, let's dive in. Today we're unpacking something, well, pretty immense. It's a calculation from ancient prophecy called the 70 Jubilees. And our source material lays out this incredibly detailed 3,430-year timeline. It stretches from a really foundational moment in Israel's history right up to a specific, maybe world-changing date.
That's right. And our goal here is really to look closely at how the source material gets there. It uses biblical chronology, quite detailed stuff, to lock down this huge span of time.
And the focus is specific, isn't it?
Very specific. The core theme, the thing that keeps coming up, is the actual physical apportioning of the Holy Land, Eretz Israel.
So we need to understand the math, the history behind it, and I guess critically how the source connects it all to, well, to right now, essentially, leading up to September 2032.
Exactly. September 2032, that's the claim terminus.
So that date really frames our discussion. The big question the source seems to pose is why? Why is this division of land under Joshua, which, I mean, that was almost 3,500 years ago,
Right.
why does that connect to headlines we might see today? It's like the source is saying there's this giant unbroken clock running.
And what's really fascinating, or maybe startling, depending on your view, is how directly the source ties that ancient event to modern decisions. The math points squarely at Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement in 2032, as the endpoint.
Okay.
And to make that case, the source highlights two key moments: the original apportionment under Joshua, which it calls divinely ordained, and then some very recent international actions around a reapportionment that supposedly happened back in September 2025.
Okay, so let's get the basics down first. This ancient clock, it's based on jubilees. Can you define that cycle for us? How does it add up to 3,430 years?
Sure. So the fundamental unit is the Jubilee cycle. The source defines this based on Leviticus as 49 solar years, not 50, but 49 for the cycle length itself.
49 years.
Right. And the prophecy is for 70 Jubilees. So you just multiply 70 cycles times 49 years per cycle.
And that gives you 3,430 years. Simple math, but yeah, huge implications.
Precisely.
Now, we often talk about other biblical timelines, like Daniel's 70 weeks, which seem focused on the people of Israel or maybe the city, Jerusalem. Why is the land the absolute focus here?
Ah, that's the crucial difference, the land. Because the Jubilee, as it's laid out in Leviticus 25, is fundamentally a land governance clock. Think about it. It mandated sabbaticals for the land every 7 years, rest for the soil.
Right, the sabbatical year.
Exactly. But then the Jubilee year itself, the 50th year following the 49-year cycle, that was revolutionary. It was designed, really, to prevent permanent consolidation of land and wealth.
How did it do that? What was this reset function?
Well, think of it as a divinely mandated anti-monopoly law, economic justice baked into the calendar. The Jubilee year meant liberty was proclaimed throughout the land. Debts were canceled.
Okay.
And critically, all ancestral family land had to be returned. So if your family fell on hard times and had to sell their inheritance,
it came back.
It came back in the Jubilee, no questions asked. It ensured that Joshua's original apportionment wasn't just a one-off map. It was the permanent legal baseline for property rights. So the clock, this 70 Jubilees clock, tracks the ownership, the stewardship of the land itself.
That really elevates that moment with Joshua. It's not just history, it's like the foundational legal charter for the land forever.
That's exactly how the source presents it.
Yeah.
So the starting point for this 3,430-year clock is that specific moment, the divinely ordained apportioning of the land to the 12 tribes under Joshua. That's the trigger event.
And the end point, the terminus.
The source claims it's another highly significant last day appointment, specifically the second coming of the Messiah, happening on Yom Kippur Tishrei 10, the Day of Atonement. This event, it says, kicks off the millennium and formally announces the great Jubilee year of Messiah.
Okay, quick pause for anyone listening who might not be familiar. Yom Kippur Tishrei 10, just briefly.
Sure. Yom Kippur is the Day of Atonement. It's generally considered the holiest day in the Jewish calendar, a day of fasting repentance. Tishrei 10 is just its date on the Hebrew calendar, usually falls in September or early October.
Got it. So, in this prophetic framework, the source sees the end of the age culminating on that specific day of judgment and resolution.
That's the claim.
Okay, so we have this 3,430-year timeline tied firmly to the land. Now, how does this connect, if at all, to that other really famous prophecy, Daniel's 70 weeks? That one is 70 times 7, so 490 years, right? And usually linked to the city of the people.
Right, 490 prophetic years. And yes, there's a mathematical connection the source points out that's, well, quite elegant, actually.
How so?
That 490-year period from Daniel, it can be seen as exactly 10 perfect Jubilee cycles. 10 times 49 years is 490.
Huh. 10 Jubilee cycles, so it's like they're built from the same blocks.
It suggests a deep structural relationship, yeah. Like the calendar governing the people and the city uses the same fundamental 49-year unit as the calendar governing the land.
That's a striking internal consistency.
It is. And here's where they supposedly converge. Daniel's 70 weeks prophecy uses 360-day prophetic years, not solar years like the Jubilees. But despite that difference, the source claims the only time these two massive timelines intersect is at their calculated endpoint.
Edges.
Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. Or, as the source puts it, Judgment Day. The land clock and the city people clock are said to finish at the exact same moment in 2032.
Okay. We've got the span 3,430 years. We've got the proposed end date, 2032. Now comes the tricky part, maybe the most technical bit. Nailing down that start year, 1399 BCE. Let's walk through the source's logic for dating Joshua's apportionment, step by step if we can.
Okay. We need an anchor point in history. The source uses 1 Kings 6, verse 1. It's a specific chronological statement. King Solomon started building the temple in the 480th year after the exodus from Egypt.
Right, Solomon's temple. That's the key reference point. So we work backwards from there.
Exactly. Standard chronology, widely accepted, places the start of Solomon's reign around 970 BCE.
Okay.
The text says he began building in the 4th year of his reign. So that's 967 BCE. Now that 480th year phrasing is important. The source interprets it as an inclusive count, meaning 479 full years had passed since the Exodus.
Now, I know some scholars argue that 480 number might be symbolic, like 12 40-year generations. Does the source engage with that criticism?
It does acknowledge the debate, but strongly argues for taking the text literally here. It insists the wording implies a precise chronological duration, 479 full years. If you accept that.
Then you just count back 479 years from 967 BCE.
Correct. And that calculation lands the Exodus date squarely in 1446 BCE.
1446 BCE for the Exodus. Okay. Now, how do we get from leaving Egypt to dividing up the land? That didn't happen immediately.
No, it took time. 47 years, according to the sources reading. First, there was the rebellion in Kadesh Barnea. That's when the spies returned with the negative report. This happened about 2 years after the Exodus.
So around 1444 BCE.
Around 1444 BCE. And the source notes a detail from Joshua 14.7. Joshua himself states he was 40 years old at that time, at Kadesh Barnea.
Okay, 40 years old then. What's the final piece that locks down the apportionment date itself?
It comes from later in that same chapter, Joshua 14, verse 10. When Joshua is actually dividing the land among the tribes, he states he is now 85 years old.
Ah, so 45 years have passed since Kadesh Barnea.
Exactly. 45 years elapsed between the rebellion, 1444 BCE, and the apportionment. So you subtract those 45 years from 1444 BCE.
And that gives you?
1399 BCE. That's the date the source pins down as the start, the absolute beginning of the 70 Jubilees timeline.
Wow. That's definitely a meticulous reconstruction from the text. Okay, so let's do the final sum. 3,430 years, starting in 1399 BCE.
Right, and here's the little quirk you always have with BCE CEs. There's no year zero. So 1399 BCE is effectively year Nettikin of 1398 when calculating forward into the Common Era.
Okay.
So you take the full span, 3,430 years, subtract that 3,398.
And you land on 2032 CE.
2032 CE.
And that's the final date. The end of this age, according to the source's calculation, falling precisely on Yom Kippur, Day of Atonement, in September 2032.
That's the conclusion.
But arriving at 2032, that date immediately forces a specific and very near-term implication for the year 2025, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. Okay. If 2032 is the finish line, then you count back 7 years. And 2025 lines up perfectly as the start of the final 7-year cycle. What Daniel called the 70th week.
It's the final 7 years.
Yes. And the source even notes a specific day count, 2,550 days, bridging the start of that week and the final terminus in 2032.
And the start of that final 7-year countdown is marked by another specific day, Yom Teruah. What's that?
Yom Teruah is the Feast of Trumpets. You might know it as Rosh Hashanah. It's traditionally the Jewish New Year. So the logic is, if the final cycle ends on Yom Kippur 2032, it must begin 7 years earlier, on Yom Teruah 2025. And this creates a sort of narrative tension because the source puts huge emphasis on a major geopolitical event that supposedly culminated right around the eve of that specific date, Yom Teruah, September 23rd, 2025.
Right. This brings us into the modern era, and specifically this event the source highlights involving a UN vote.
Yes. The source focuses intensely on a moment where, it claims, major Western nations, it names the UK, Canada, Australia, France, basically voted together in the UN to formally assent to a two-state solution, effectively establishing a Palestinian state.
And the source views this not just as politics, but as a major prophetic fulfillment.
A trigger event, yes. Because remember, the whole Jubilee clock is about the apportionment of the land.
Right, the original division.
So the source sees this 2025 UN action as a human attempt by nations it calls less than divinely ordained to reapportion the Holy Land. A direct countermand, in its view, to Joshua's original 1399 BCE division.
And we need to be clear here, just reporting what the source says. It's extremely critical of this political move, which many others might see as a step towards peace.
Extremely critical. The source argues that giving ruling authority and ownership over sacred land, particularly areas it connects prophetically to the people of the prince who is to come, is a terrible mistake, spiritually and politically dangerous.
It questions whether it brings peace or something else.
Right. It asks directly, will this lead to peace or just more conflict? And it invokes Jeremiah 6.14, warning against cries of peace, peace, when there is no peace.
And it tries to bolster this warning by pointing to past events, claiming correlations between land divisions and negative consequences.
It does. The source references things like the Oslo Accords, the Camp David Accord, and asserts that historically, whenever Israel faced pressure to give up control over parts of the land, major negative events, sometimes natural disasters or severe weather, followed quickly.
It cites Bill Koenig's work on this?
Yes. The book Eye to Eye is mentioned, which specifically tries to track these alleged correlations. So the source frames the 2025 UN action not just as politically unwise, but as potentially courting, well, severe judgment.
Okay, so connecting this final seven-year cycle, 2025 to 2032, back to the bigger apocalyptic picture, the terminus in 2032 isn't just about the Messiah's return. The source links it to a final judgment on something called Mystery Babylon.
Correct. This is where the scope really widens out. That 2032 end date isn't just the end of the 70 Jubilees, it's explicitly tied to the prophesied destruction of Mystery Babylon.
Which the source interprets how? As a city, a system.
Primarily as a global system, I think. Rooted in the prophecies of Jeremiah, particularly chapter 25, verse 12, talking about its everlasting desolation, but detailed most vividly in the book of Revelation.
Revelation 18.
Exactly. Revelation 18 describes this entity, Babylon, as having immense global economic and political influence. The source highlights verses like 18.2, Babylon the Great is fallen, and 18.21, which is thrown down violently like a millstone.
So the 2032 date marks not just the end of the age, but the end of this dominant global structure, the one perceived as facilitating the division of the land.
That seems to be the core argument. It confirms the deeply apocalyptic nature of the 2032 terminus in the source's view.
And the end isn't just destruction. It's positioned as clearing the way for a final, definitive, new apportioning.
Yes, what the source calls the Great Apportioning. It explains that after the Bema Judgment, which is another key theological event mentioned, the judgment seat for believers, the returning Messiah, will execute a new permanent division of the land.
And it mentions something beyond just the land.
It does. It speaks of this final apportionment encompassing greater realities of a wider global and extraterrestrial nature. So the 3,430-year clock winds down just before this ultimate magnificent reset of everything.
Wow. Okay, let's just try and summarize the sheer scale of this calculation one more time for you, the listener. The source presents this unbroken timeline stretching 3,430 years. Starting from the apportionment of the land back in 1399 BCE, meticulously pieced together from scripture, it claims to connect directly to modern political actions in 2025 and points to this incredibly specific finish line in September 2032. It's a breathtaking claim about prophetic precision.
It really is. It attempts to link these profound ancient cycles, you know, the solar calendar, the agricultural rest, the whole Jubilee economic structure directly to specific modern political votes and distinct religious festival dates like Yom Teruah 2025 and Yom Kippur 2032. The underlying message seems to be that time isn't random, but follows a predetermined, potentially divine structure.
And the source concludes with this powerful echo from the past, drawing its final challenge directly from Joshua, right at the time of the original apportionment. It quotes Joshua 24.15, urging a decision.
Choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve. Will it be the gods your fathers served beyond the Euphrates, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you were living? As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord.
A very direct challenge.
It is, and maybe it leaves you, the listener, with a question to think about. If ancient chronology, based on cycles of the earth and focused on this one specific piece of land, can supposedly be tracked to intersect so precisely with specific modern political decisions like the reported 2025 international agreement, What might that suggest about the relationship between prophecy, time, and the events unfolding around us right now?